Sons, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Sporty greetings to all our Voice of America listeners. This is VOA Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the December 29th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Our starting line is African Athletics, and the future looks bright indeed for 21-year-old Ugandan runner Jacob Kiplimo. Jacob is the reigning world champion and world record holder at the half marathon distance, but he's also quite capable of winning medals in shorter races. In fact, on July 30th, Jacob Kiplimo won a bronze medal at 10,000 meters at the Tokyo Olympics. And he finished fifth overall at 5,000 meters in Tokyo. In this feature by Magume Davis Rocka Winch, Jacob Kiplimo says he's thrilled and delighted by his performances this year.
2021, it was an amazing year to me. The program I was doing was fantastic. It was not all about me. It was about all my training mates and the coaches and the management. I think to me, this year was a perfect year to me.
Uganda's long-distance runner, Jacob Kiplimo, was a major force to reckon in athletics this year. He won a bronze at the recent Japan Olympics in 10,000 meters and was mostly a headline, at times breaking world records at ease. By so doing, he marked his name among the world elite runners in long distance. The 21-year-old Kiplimo ran the fastest half marathon ever, clocking 57 minutes, 31 seconds as he broke Kenya's Kibiwot Kandi's record at the EDP Lisbon Half Marathon. He says he was amazed.
I'm an Olympic bronze medal in 10,000. Even I finished in 5K in a finals, I was position 5. But to me, it was my achievement. That one was in Lisbon Half Marathon. That was my big achievement I achieved this year. Breaking a world record is not something easy.
Kiplimo's speed at the Lisbon meet was unmatched just after 3 kilometers as the Ugandan ran solo at the peak. Sports reporter and analyst Darren Cheyune was watching.
I think running 57:31 to break the record by a second may be the big news. But if you watch the manner in which he ran that half marathon, he broke away from the rest of the pack just after about almost 6 kilometers and ran almost the three quarters of the race solo up front before breaking the world record. I think that stands out more than the Olympic bronze medal that he got over the 10,000 meters. And not to forget that he surged from about fifth or sixth place with 400 meters to go to get that bronze medal in the National Stadium in Tokyo.
Kiplimo first came to prominence as a teenager when he won the World Under-20 cross-country title at the age of 17 and has gone on to participate and win big in both local and international events. The talented youngster has previously equally excelled in middle-distance races, 1,500 and 3,000 meters, with the respective personal best of 3.5024 and 7.26.64, respectively. Kiplimo is grateful to train alongside 5,000 and 10,000 meters world record holder Joshua Cheptegei, whom he calls, in two quotes, elder brother. He says aside from him and Cheptegei, Uganda has more talented runners to compete for honors at world meets.
First world champions, that will be in Oregon. Then after, we shall be going to the Commonwealth. I know that we have a lot of potential because now the boys are coming seriously. I'm there. We have Joshua. Oh, we have a lot of people that are coming. These upcoming athletes, they are seriously. I know that when we will reach in the Commonwealth, you know we have a lot of medals. I think not less than 5 or what.
Cheyune says he wasn't surprised of Kiplimo's exploits this far and believes the best are yet to come.
He's able to beat anyone that comes in front of him, and he's really, really impressive on the road. I think for the years to come, we're going to see him dominate every other thing that Joshua Cheptegei has won. If Cheptegei leaves the track as expected after the Paris 2024 games, we think Kiplimo could be the first of Uganda's athletics on track.
Long-distance trainer Rafael Kasaja agrees.
He's going to be the future of
hour run in Cheptegei showed us the way he's done it all. But I still believe this young man has something extra that he will do or add to. He has a bright future. The future is very bright. I think he's a force to reckon with. This guy basically won, I think, one of our first junior cross-country titles. You see, that thing had eluded us for a very long time. This guy literally destroyed everyone to give us the first ever world junior champion.
As a young boy, the young Kiplimo would run more than 5 kilometers as he went to and from school, and this early experience has helped him become a better runner. Kiplimo has some advice for the young athletes and says they must work hard for them to succeed.
I just want to say to our colleagues that we just focus. I know that you have all my fans here. I said, thank you so much, everyone, for just for cheering us when we are outside or when we are in Uganda. Thank you so much for your prayers.
For the Sunny Side of Sports, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinjiri, Kampala, Uganda.
Sport greetings, everyone. This is Falelat Ogukoya, Olympic silver and bronze medalist. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on Voice of America. Please continue to stay safe and avoid contracting COVID-19.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
The World Health Organization and Africa Center for Disease Control say we can all help fight the corona pandemic by wearing face masks that cover our mouths and nose when we are in crowded places or areas. For more information, check with reliable sources such as the WHO and Africa CDC. And remember to listen to VOA for the latest news on COVID-19.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
I'm VOA's Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Elsewhere in African athletics, another highlight this year occurred October 11th. When Kenya swept the men's and women's titles in the 125th running of the Boston Marathon. Let's listen in again to my report. Benson Kipruto and Diana Kipyegei waved Kenya's flag high Monday at the Boston Marathon. Kipruto and Kipyegei won the men's and women's titles, marking the 8th time since 2000 there has been a Kenyan sweep in Boston. About 16,000 runners started the Boston Marathon, a smaller field than the usual 30,000 plus because of the coronavirus pandemic. The Boston Marathon returned after a 30-month absence. It was canceled last year for the first time in its 125-year history because of the pandemic, and it also moved from its traditional April date to October. Speaking after the race, though, men's winner Benjamin Kipruto said, and I quote, "There's not a lot different on the course." The 30-year-old Kipruto covered the course in 2 hours, 9 minutes, and 51 seconds. He finished ahead of three Ethiopians, 2016 Boston winner Lenny Berhanu, Jamal Yimmer, and Sedat Ayana. Meanwhile, women's winner Diana Kipyegei had a winning time of 2 hours, 24 minutes, and 45 seconds. And another Kenyan, two-time world champion Edna Kiplagat, was the second woman in Boston, finishing 24 seconds behind Kipyegei. Now, Kiplagat has had a great running career. Edna won Boston in 2017, and she's also a former winner of the London and New York City marathons. Boston Marathon champions Benson Kipruto and Diana Kipyegei each received first-place prizes of $150,000.
Hello, sports fans. This is Paul Tergat, marathon champion from Kenya. You are listening to the Sony Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
Voice of America!
Paul Turgat has moved to athletic administration since hanging up his track spikes. The 52-year-old Turgat was elected to another four-year term as president of the National Olympic Committee of Kenya earlier this month. Ghana made a splash this year when, for the first time, it hosted the African Swimming Championships in October. In this Sunny Side of Sports highlight for 2021, Yawafusu Larbi reports from the capital, Accra. Sporty greetings, Yao!
Sporty greetings, Sunny. The curtains have drawn down in Accra at the 14th Kana Africa Seniors and Juniors Swimming Championships, with South Africa and Egypt the biggest winners of the competition. The competition, hosted at the Trust Sports Emporium, saw over 400 swimmers in the capital of Ghana for the week-long event, which ended on October 17. At the end of the championships, 11 new records were set, with South Africa and Egypt showcasing their prowess in the water, winning a combined 197 medals in the juniors and seniors events. South Africa topped the medal table with 57 overall. One of their 24 gold medals in that haul included a record-breaking one from Martin Bindel, who took apart a 13-year-old record in the men's 200-meter backstroke previously held by countryman George Durand.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, it's been a long month for me, coming off the FINA World Cups in Europe, you know, Berlin, Budapest, a lot of hard racing, short course obviously as well, so it's come here, you know, it's always a huge honour representing my country, and I mean, I know it was a 12-year record, so obviously really excited. George Durant is someone I look up to. He's a personal friend of mine. You know, being the African 200-meter backstroke record holder, long course, it's someone I try, kind of, that's been mentoring me for quite some time. So I really look up to him. So I've gotten that record, ecstatic.
The championship, though, truly belonged to Rebecca Medere, who won an astonishing 11 gold medals, the most by a single athlete at these games, and along with it, the prize for the best female swimmer of the competition.
We're feeling a little bit rough, but yeah, that's where all the hard work and the training comes into play. I mean, if you're used to finishing the week off strong and finishing the week off hard and fast, your racing will come through like that. So it's just about building racing endurance now, and that's what this gala is about.
Amidst the dominance of South Africa and Egypt, though, there were some other stories of triumph. Cape Verdean teenager Jayla Pina won her country's first ever medal in the swimming championship, storming to a bronze in the women's 100-meter breaststroke. It is a medal she believes will help propel her career to the next level.
Yeah, this is definitely a big step for me and definitely for my country, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen in the future.
Host country Ghana finished with just two medals at the end of the competition, but it was their efforts off the pool that truly captured people's imagination. Only given the nod in June this year to organize the championship, Ghana had only 3 months to pull off the competition, and they delivered spectacularly, even drawing praise from General Secretary of the Confederation of African Swimming Associations, Mohamed Diop.
We are very happy. First, because it is in the difficult time, in the COVID pandemic, it's not easy to organize some things. And also, the federation decide to combine junior and senior championships. Why? It will be a difficult challenge. But the Federation of Ghana organized this competition, and we're happy.
All of the credit belongs to the folks at the Ghana Swimming Association, led by its president, Delphina Quay, who explains why Ghana was trusted with organizing the competition in such short notice.
So we are very honored to host all the 42 countries as the Ghana Bureau members here for this competition. And we bid for this competition earlier in the year, and surprisingly, not to us though, they gave it to us because of what we did last year. Last year we hosted successfully the Ghana Zone 2 Championship. And I think they were impressed with us, you know, with the Ghanaian hospitality, and we like to do things well. So they saw that, well, if this comes to us as well, they had no doubt that we'll be able to manage to host this successfully.
Ghana has definitely outdone themselves, putting together one of the best Ghana swimming championships in history. One, the athletes say they have truly enjoyed.
I've really enjoyed my experience. It's actually my first like African champs that I've been to. So I've actually really enjoyed the whole experience altogether. And the pool is such a nice pool.
It feels great. I've never been here before. Really awesome country, really nice people and very friendly. We're very grateful for Ghana. And the whole Egyptian team has been saying the same things I'm saying. So we're really excited for a great championship.
Yeah, the people are so friendly and they treat you really, really well and nicely. So I've enjoyed the hospitality here in Ghana, which definitely helps when it comes to the racing. This pool's beautiful.
From Ghana, the Ghana Swimming Championships move to Tunisia next year. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Yao Fusulabi in Accra.
Thanks, Yao.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Thanks, David. That's David Vandy, the host of the VOA's African Beat music show. On the African men's football beat, the continent's premier tournament, the Africa Cup of Nations, kicks off in Cameroon in 11 days. 24 teams have been drawn into six groups of four each for the opening round. Group C features Gabon, Comoros, Morocco, and Ghana, a four-time African champion. For analysis of Group C, Iron Mike Mbonye spoke with African football analyst Lacan Ige.
Group C might just be a straight fight between Ghana and Morocco. Ghana, four-time former champions of African Cup of Nations. Morocco has been one of the top teams in Africa, especially at the club level, while Gabon and Comoros will just fancy their chances in this group.
Some football analysts will easily give the group to Morocco and Ghana. Do you agree?
I think it's a straight one between Ghana and Morocco. Gabon might just create an upset if they can beat Comoros and get a draw either against Ghana or Morocco and fancy their chances of qualifying for the next round. For Comoros, I think this will be a blessing for them. They might just savour, their chances of coming to the Nations Cup for the first time, arrive in Cameroon to enjoy themselves, learn one or two things about African football, especially at the international level, and, of course, generally enjoy themselves in Cameroon. So pundits would give this one to Ghana, probably coming first, Morocco second, Gabon third, based on current form, and, of course, Comoro taking the rear guard. I think it's an easy group, really. And the real contest can only begin when we know the two qualifiers from this group. So for me, I will join others to say, look, this could just be Ghana coming first or second, Morocco joining Ghana to qualify for the next stage.
Comoros has participated in AFCON for the first time, and Gabon with Arsenal star Pierre Aubameyang have played in previous AFCON tournaments. Do you see them as minnows in Group C?
Gabon can only be underrated to anyone's peril. They have the personnel, they have the experience, they've played in the Nations Cup before. So they know what it is to play at the topmost level. And that's one of the things that might just count in their favor, being underrated, nobody giving them any chance in this group. But then they can create an upset if they can beat Comoros and get either a draw or victory against Ghana or Morocco. Then they could as well see themselves in the next round of the Nations Cup. But like I said earlier, Ghana and Morocco, for me, qualify from this group.
That's African football analyst Lacan Ige. And he spoke with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Port Harcourt, Nigeria.
Sporty greetings. This is Sunday Olise, former captain and coach of the Super Eagles of Nigeria. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, Sunday, and happy holidays.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossings, where we feature music and interviews along with your favorite artists from around the world. tune in and interact live with us here in Washington, D.C.
Hello, Shirin.
Hello, Larry. How are you?
Good. How are you tonight?
Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT.
Thanks, Larry. That's Larry London, a man who's always ready to cross musical borders. I encourage our Sunny Side of Sports listeners to follow me on Facebook and Twitter. My Facebook address is facebook.com/VOA Sunny. Once again, that address, facebook.com/VOA Sunny. And my Twitter handle is @VOA Sunny Sports. Once again, my Twitter handle, @VOA Sunny Sports. The Sunny Side of Sports remembers Hall of Fame coach and broadcaster John Madden, who is credited with helping make the National Football League probably the most widely followed sport here in the USA. Madden died Tuesday at the age of 85. He's being described as larger than life, a man who connected with his players as a coach and with fans as a broadcaster. Now, John Madden's career basically had three distinct stages as a coach, as a broadcaster, and as the face of a very popular video game. The AP Sagar Magani tells us more.
Football legend John Madden has died at 85. To different generations, Madden was different things. The coach who led Oakland's renegade Raiders to a Super Bowl win in the 70s, saying he didn't care if his guys combed their hair. He did care if they jumped off sides. The unpretentious broadcaster who used booms and doinks and a telestrator while teaming with fellow legends like Al Michaels.
John Madden is the most extraordinary talent in the business ever.
And the face of Madden NFL Football, one of the most successful sports video games ever. When he was voted to Pro Football's Hall of Fame in 2006.
You say you're a coach or a broadcaster or a video game guy, I'm a coach.
That's what NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell called him in a statement announcing his death, saying Madden was football. I'm Sagar Magani.
For more on John Madden, here is the AP's Oscar Wells Gabriel.
Depending on how old you are and how you do NFL football, John Madden will be remembered as a legendary coach, enthusiastic broadcaster, author, or the man who gave his name to one of the most popular video games in history. The league has confirmed Madden's death, saying it came unexpectedly but did not provide a cause. He was 85 years old. Madden had a 10-year stint as head coach of the Oakland Raiders, winning 7 conference titles and a Super Bowl ring along the way. After retiring at the tender age of 42, he did things that made him a household name well beyond coaching. A generation of viewers learned the game beyond the X's and O's with his use of the telestrator, strokes on the TV screen, punctuated with a boom or a doink. Then he went on to become the face and, for years, the voice of Madden NFL Football, one of the most successful and popular video games of all time. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
And thanks to Oscar Wells Gabriel and Sagar Magani for their reports on John Madden. The Globe Soccer Awards were held Monday in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates. And the two big winners at the ceremony, star strikers Robert Lewandowski of Bayern Munich and Kylian Mbappe of Paris Saint-Germain, spoke out against the plan to hold the World Cup every 2 years. VOA's Gwen Uten has their reaction. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sonny. Robert Lewandowski and Kylian Mbappe shared the stage as big winners on Monday at this year's Global Soccer Awards ceremony in Dubai. And the two star athletes also shared an opinion about a proposed plan launched by FIFA President Gianni Infantino to hold the World Cup tournament every 2 years. Just after being named the Fans Player of the Year and winning the Maradona Award for Best Goal Scorer, Robert Lewandowski told a reporter he is not a fan of a biennial tournament.
We have so many games every year. We have so many tough weeks. We also need the break. And it's not only that if we get 2-3 weeks break in summertime, but not now every 2 years, that will be enough because we have to take it for the future. If you want to play every 2 years for World Cup, that we have to, the expectation should be that the players, the time for the playing on the high level for the football players, that's going down, that maybe for the 5, 6, 7 years, not longer, but that will be impossible for the body, for the mentality as well. And if you want to play football longest 10 years, also you need a break. It's impossible to play every 2 years World Cup, for sure, maybe it's possible, but to get high performance, that would be very difficult.
PSG forward Kylian Mbappe, who was crowned best men's player of the year, said he agrees with Lewandowski and added that holding the World Cup more frequently would lessen the appeal of the tournament.
My opinion is the World Cup is the World Cup. It's a special thing because it's something every 4 years. You saw, like I talk about it, people talk about it, about the best thing, the best competition in the world. If you have it every 2 years, it can be start to be normal to play World Cup. And I want to say that's not normal. That's something amazing, something maybe you play one time in your life. And I agree with Robert when you talk about performance. We play like already 60 games in the year. You have the Euro, you have the World Cup, we have now the National League. You have so many competition, and we are happy to play, but when it's too much, it's too much.
In late November, the 52 members that make up the Confederation of African Football, or CAF, voted unanimously in support of the proposal to stage the World Cup every 2 years. However, Gianni Infantino has faced opposition from confederations in Europe and South America that have come out against changes to the tournament's current 4-year cycle. UEFA, the governing body of European football, says the new schedule would create an imbalance between local, domestic, and international competitions. And the South American Football Confederation, CONMEBOL, said it would not take part if the tournament is held every 2 years. Last month, Gianni Infantino pushed back, saying that those who oppose the reforms are simply afraid of change.
Those who are against are those who are at the top. It happens every sector of life. When there are reforms and changes, those who are at the top, they don't want anything to change because they are at the top. They are afraid, maybe, that if something changes, their leadership position is at risk. We understand that. But at the same time, we cannot close the door. We need to keep the door open. We need to give hope. We need to give opportunities to the entire world.
Last week, Infantino held a virtual global summit to discuss the future of international football, and he reiterated his stance that the World Cup should be hosted every 2 years. In the news conference that followed, Infantino said a recent survey concluded that a younger generation wants the World Cup tournament held more regularly and more often. Infantino also stated that doubling the number of tournaments will add over $4 billion in extra revenue for FIFA, a benefit he's confident will lead to a majority vote in support of his proposal. The FIFA conference will meet again in Doha on March 31st. However, Infantino has not confirmed whether or not his plan will be held to a vote at that time. So far, no timeline has been given on how soon a biennial World Cup would be implemented. In the meantime, next year's World Cup is set to make history as the first tournament to be held at the end of the calendar year in November and December, and the first World Cup tournament ever to be held in the Middle East. The World Cup will increase its number of finalists from 32 to 48 when Canada, Mexico, and the United States host the tournament in 2026. And that is all for me, Sonny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uden. And that wraps up the December 29th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.